things my family did. I am not the voices in my head. I am not the pieces of the broken earth inside. I am light. 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 Not the mistakes that I have made, or any of the things that caused me pain. I am not the pieces of the dream I left behind. I am light. I'm light. I am light. I am light. I am not my race. My soul inside is all light, is all light. I am light. I am light. I am light. I am light. Defined. I am the God on the inside. I am a star, a piece of it all. I am light. I am light.
It's beautiful. Wow, that was fabulous. Thank you, Point of Light. I don't remember hearing that before. Is that
India Irie's song?
Oh, I love her. Oh, yes, yes, right.
Very popular.
Yes, yes, yes. She says it like it is. I love her very much, India Irie. So that's beautiful, and it's going to knock your socks off when you realize you just gave the end of my message. Which that just happens, doesn't that just happen all too often? So good morning. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm the spiritual leader of this community, and I'm so happy to see each and every one of you. It's so wonderful to have you sitting in a chair today, because I have something important to say, and I'm going to say it in a way that I've never quite said it before. So it is great that you are here, and get ready to take notes and put on your thinking caps, because you won't want to miss too much of this. We're going in a whole new direction, and I'm excited about it. The title of my message this morning is The Shield Against Adversity, and it is a title I took from a quotation from the founder of this teaching, Dr. Ernest Holmes, when he wrote it in the first book he ever published, Creative Mind, in 1918. It is why we are celebrating 100 years of this philosophy. And these are the words he said at that time. The emancipated soul must always realize its union with the Father. His word must be spoken with absolute authority, with no uncertainty, and that then is our shield against adversity. Yeah, that's a lot to say. So we want to free our souls. We want, which is what we do here every Sunday. We come to be inspired and uplifted and to feel empowered in our lives again. And the way that we do that is not picking up a shield, but that we align ourselves to that one, to recognize that right where we are, God is, that nothing can separate us from that power and that presence. And in that awareness, that becomes the shield for adversity. So last week, I was chatting about don't be against anything. Be for, know what you are for. Don't waste any energy being against anything. And then I go home, and it was a really good talk. It's really, you should hear the recording. It's on the internet already. It was a really good message. Everybody said so, not just me. And then I look on Sunday or on Monday morning, I always pull out whatever I'm going to talk about next week so I can begin to marinate in it. You know, I can begin to soak it in and let Spirit guide me to pull the information that needs to be said this day. And so immediately, as soon as I saw I had said the shield against adversity, I want to tell you, I started wrestling with God right there. You know, Jacob can't do it any better than me. I was wrestling with and struggling with, now how am I going to use that word against? Because something profound happened to me last Sunday. While I was delivering that message, I stopped and sort of spontaneously said, against. Just hear the word. It feels heavy just to say the word. So now I look at, what am I going to talk about this week? Oh, crap. It's against something. How am I going to work that out? So, you know, I labored over it for a while and argued with God. And I came to this conclusion that there must be another way of looking at what that all means. And I was led to look up the meaning of the word against and to look at the meaning to see how I can now apply it and use it in a practical way for us, so as we talk about having a shield against adversity. And what I found was something fascinating. To be against suggests an opposition. But to be, but the word against also implies a coming together or a resting alongside of. In other words, I put the rake against the wall. Now it's just going to rest there, right? And so more than that, even more fun than that, as I started looking at the root of the word against has the entire word again inside of it. And you know what it means to do something again? It's to renew it, to reconsider it. And so I thought that is exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to reconsider this idea of being against adversity, and we're going to see that there's another way for us to set down our armor. Oh my gosh, we get tired of defending ourselves and carrying around this armor and suiting ourselves up so that we can't be impacted by all the pain that's out there in the world. But there's another way we can do it. And I talked about it last week. It's about how do we stand for something. And today I want to speak about the way that that shield, that great idea of protection, is simply in really deepening in our understanding of our oneness with God, our union with life, our connectedness to each other and to all living matter. So we're going to take it a little step further, and we're going to set down our shield of honor as if it were a shield we're holding and it's heavy, and we're going to lean it against the adversity. We're just going to lean it against the adversity. It's there if you need to go back and pick it up later, but we're going to rest it for a while so that we can reconsider anew. So that we can begin again, like T.S. Eliot said so beautifully, to return to that place where you once began, but to know it for the first time. And so that's what I want us to do today. I want us to return again to that way that we're going to combine these ideas, and we're going to look at what it means in a very practical and useful way. So as I thought about, well, how am I going to make this work? I thought, well, think of it as if you take again and against and both of those meanings, it's not a conclusion. It's not a blockage or an obstruction, but we're talking about something that continues. It's like saying furthermore. And then I had this beautiful idea that it really is like saying, On the other hand, yes, this is going on in my life right now, and it may not feel very good. But on the other hand, there's a greater truth that we can align to. And I think this is especially relevant to use that term, on the other hand, because, you know, we are held in the hand of God. The other hand is the hand of God. So we can go through life trying to figure everything out on our own, and do everything that we think is ours to do, and to do a damn good job of it. And then on the other hand, we can get out of the way and align to that power and that presence. What is it that Holmes said so perfectly, and I love it so much, that there is a power and a presence for good in this universe, and we can use it. And so I'm going to talk today about how you can use it. You don't want to miss this, because this is a very practical explanation. So here's an illustration that I was thinking would work to start it off. If I leave the sanctuary today, if I leave this building and I go outside and some freak monsoon has, or Haboob. You'd have to have been here last week. It's a little private joke. If we left the building today and we walked outside and it was pouring rain, let's say the monsoon just swooped in while we were here unexpectedly. So I could stand out by my car and go, oh, look at this. It's my car. I just washed the car. I'm getting all wet. Oh, my goodness. So I'm looking at the facts. This teaching says that the first thing we have to do is look at the disharmony. Look at what's not working. Emma Curtis Hopkins says that the great Christian mystic that studied, Ernest Holmes studied under, one of the three great teachers he studied with. Emma says that you have to look at the discordance. You have to get it and say it before you can deny it, before you can turn in the direction. So here I am. I'm getting wet and I don't like it. And that's a fact. But I can do something about it. I can stop and say, wait a minute. I don't like how this feels getting wet. So on the other hand, it's raining. Maybe we even really love that it's raining. And I can get myself out of the inclement weather. I can jump in my car. I can go back in the building. But I have the power of choice. I have the power of movement. I have that which is on the other hand. But sometimes we're so involved with the problem or what we don't like that we forget there's a whole other hand that we can take a stand in another way. We can, yeah, that's right. So if I don't like the rain, I don't need to stand outside in the bad weather. If I don't like the downpour, I can remove myself from the storm. Right? And are you feeling figuratively how important this is for us to begin to understand it? If you're not comfortable, what can you do that is, on the other hand, another option? Now, I'm going to be very specific by saying, giving you a couple of examples. And you could take this in any direction, but I'm going to try a few so hopefully it'll resonate for everybody in some way. I look in my wallet, and I only have $12 to last me till payday. Whoa, how am I going to pull that off? That doesn't feel very comfortable. I only have $12 till payday. But on the other hand, payday's coming. Every day gets me another day closer to payday. And I've had less money than this with more days to get through the month, and I've always made it in the past. And not only that, but on the other hand, I know that the amount of money I have in the bank or in my wallet is not the source of my goodness, right? So you see how it works? So let's say it appears that your neighbor is very angry at you or is in a bad mood for some reason and you think that you've done something wrong to anger your neighbor. Okay, wow, that doesn't feel good. He looks really angry today. But on the other hand, Maybe his foul mood has nothing to do with me. And if I stand in a place of love and just allow that, instead of defending myself from his anger, if I can stand in that beautiful open space of love, that love could be healing. There's always another way to look at it. Maybe it's that I have this major project that I have to get done by Friday, and I'm thinking, holy cow, there are not enough hours in this week for me to get everything done that I have done by Friday. When I recognize that I'm thinking that way, I can stop that thinking and say, but on the other hand, you know, I always get those end of month reports done. Why do I want to be upset about it all week? In God, there's always enough. There must be another way of looking at this. On the other hand, there must be a way for me to lean into this and see the greater possibilities that are available to me. So the beautiful part of all of this is that it doesn't take a lot. It just takes the tiniest spark of our awareness to notice what we're thinking about, to notice that we are focusing on what's not working instead of what could work. So this is a beautiful way to realize. The Course in Miracles has this great statement that says, it only takes a tiny place of willingness, just the tiniest, you know, place of willingness to begin to see things differently. Because right where I am, God is. Right where you are, no matter what you're going through, there too is the fullness of spirit and the perfection of life, desiring to be revealed through your experience and your ability to notice what's on the other hand. Now, when we react to appearances as though they are real, we are reacting as though we are less than whatever is in front of us, as if we're not capable of managing whatever's in front of us. And certainly there are times and there are situations where that feels pretty real. But when we do that, we are really considering ourselves flawed. We are really looking at ourselves as inferior. And that's not a good place to be, because when you start feeling that way, you will start looking out and you will try to, in defending yourself, in the natural human technique of a defense mechanism, you will begin to see flaws in other people so that you can feel better about yourself. And that's not the way we spread love on this world. It's a completely opposite than that. So it's normal that when we are feeling, see, if you're feeling flawed in any way, you are actually demonstrating that you believe you could be spiritually impoverished. And that's just not true. That is just not possible. And so once you feel safe and you begin practicing that your safety lies in your defenselessness, most powerful lesson, a life-changing lesson for me early on my spiritual journey, then you don't have to look outside of you to get filled up anymore. That's what addiction is all about, right? That drug or activity of choice that makes you, gives you that false feeling that you're going to be filled up. It has to be an inside job. So Jesus said this great quote, I think I used it a few weeks ago. I love this quote, and there are so many ways to apply it to what we're talking about today. Jesus said, I have come that you may have life, and that you may have life more abundantly. Now, when I just sat with that, when I'm writing all this material and working on it all week, I heard that, and I began to see this image of who I think Jesus the man was, because I don't see him as soft and gentle, and I see him as, you know, fully aware of his power and comfortable with who he is and what he's saying. And so I hear Jesus say, whenever I say, I come that you may have life and you may have it more abundantly, it's like the very next thing I hear are the words of his, out of his mouth, like he's saying, wake up! Look, I'm showing you a different way. I'm showing you that there's more. Quit acting impoverished. Nothing can keep your good from you. Have I not demonstrated that in the way I have come and lived my life? And then I have this idea that he would sit there and he would remind us that when we diminish the truth of who we are belittling not only ourselves but everything that we believe in, and that we should be big for God, that we can be big for God simply by remembering and aligning ourselves to spiritual principle and to these great teachings. When we do that, we can begin to see beyond the seeming obstacles. Through God, we are all guaranteed the opportunity to self-actualize, to be the highest version of who we are here to be. And anything that stands in the way of that is an obstruction that is not real. It is a belief that stands between us and the truth of who we are and why we are here and what we are to do. And you are the only one that can remove that obstruction. You have a spiritual purpose for being. Nothing can stop it. Nothing or no one against me. So put down your armor and like leaning the rake against the wall, you know, let it be and live your life in a new way. Because once you start experiencing how much you've been hanging on or defending yourself or keeping yourself safe by that protective armor of beliefs and the way we live our lives, some of the choices we make, once you recognize how heavy that stuff is, you will never pick it up again. Or you will at least notice when the load gets heavy again. I wanted to tell you a story this morning of our founding father, Ernest Holmes. It was Father's Day last week, and so I've been thinking about the founding father a lot. So I think I will tell you that story. There was a time when Ernest Holmes was only 19 years old, and he was already immersed on this gorgeous path of looking for a way to find that golden thread of truth in all religions. And he happened upon the Ralph Waldo Emerson, the Emerson's Essays. And he read from cover to cover. He read the entire manuscript, all the essays in a book. And he was changed forever. He said that it was like drinking water, that it quenched his thirst, because the way that Emerson wrote about life and his philosophy and the way he sees life was exactly the way Ernest felt it and saw it. It resonated for him as truth. Isn't it wonderful when that happens? When you find something that really speaks to you. And so he read the book. It changed his life. He found the book at his brother's house, his brother William's house, and he sat and he read it all day long. He didn't interact with Anna and William at all. He read, they went to bed, he read late into the night, and he said he had a life-changing experience because what happened was he realized, and I think often of the essay Self-reliance, thank you. So I need you. the essay Self-Reliance, and I think I've heard that that was Holmes' favorite essay, and we certainly had to read it a lot in ministry school. But what he learned is that every person has their own unique perspective. In fact, we all have different opinions, and it's not about moving through life and sharing your opinion and looking for agreement. It's slightly different than that. In fact, I think it's much deeper than that. In his own words, he said, "From reading Emerson, I learned that a person's reason and intuition is of equal value as anybody else's. That what everybody has to say is important and it matters." And what he said was that it freed him to his own authority. He realized that his own ideas and truths were important and that it was important for him to stand in his truth and to speak his truth. But that there was a way, listen carefully here, there was a way to do that where he could put down his armor, lean into this, take a firm position without being scornful or sarcastic. He learned that he could interact with people and have a different opinion, and he didn't have to put other people down. It didn't have to be the disagreeable way. And so something incredible happened from that time, and I love this story. But he had had, Ernest Holmes had had a, he's only 19 years old, but he'd had a chronic throat condition. He called it an irritation. So I'm imagining it's like allergies or something, right? So he had this chronic throat condition, this irritation, and that after he read and contemplated Emerson's essay, that it went away, that it was healed. And he believed that he had been too sensitive to the opinions of other people. He believed that as he grew more comfortable with his own intuition, standing firmly on his own idea of truth, that he found this beautiful way to speak without invalidating anybody else's beliefs. Oh, how I long to do that. And when he did that, he freed himself from the effect of the irritation. He went to a new cause and created a new situation. He changed his position. He leaned up against a new truth. My safety lies in my defenselessness. That's for me the big lesson. That's for me, that was the entry point for me into new thought. My safety lies in my defenselessness. Now, hang on, because this is where it's going to get real meaty. So, wake up, be here. Be here now. I want to talk to us about how to really use this stuff in this very practical way. How do we practice what we preach? And I want to use, by way of I want to talk about getting the building painted. Because we're about to do something absolutely extraordinary by calling everyone together to pray around this building on Wednesday night at 7:45. You can bring a lawn chair. You can come sit in your car with the air conditioning on if you like. You can walk around the building and pray out loud, or you can sit somewhere quietly and alone and face the building and just meditate. But I want to tell you today how to be very specific about it and how we use principles in exactly this situation. Number one, we look at the discordant fact. The building looks kind of sad out there, right? We're not going to pretend it's a wonderful building. It is a wonderful building. It holds plenty of life for us in the future, but we're not going to pretend that it looks good right now when it doesn't. So we're looking at the discordant fact straight on. And then we're going to say, but on the other hand, what is possible here? So what I would say is that for me, this is what it feels like. It feels like the building it's a call for love. The building is showing us it wants to be loved more. And then we notice what's wrong. And then the really tricky part is that we cannot pull into this parking lot day after day and go, look how crummy that building looks. Because we're not helping anything. So the board has been looking for, probably 2 or 3 years, I don't know. We've been looking at a way to approach a campaign, and it just hasn't been clear to us until now. Because we finally took that position of saying, on the other hand, what else is possible? The building's not going to paint itself if we don't use some principle here to get it done. And so my invitation to you is to come and let's practice what we preach. There's an incongruence. Something is in disharmony between the outside of the building and the heart, the inside of the building, the heart of our message, the reason we are here in the West Valley, that idea that we have such a relevant message, and this is a sweet place to grow. But we got to make the outside and the inside come together so that incongruence reflects something greater than what it does right now. And here's what I need you to hear. Just for now, I'm going to speak from my perspective. I don't know how we're going to do that. I don't know where the money's going to come from. I don't know who's going to end up painting the building. I don't know I don't know what color it's going to be. I am not going to sit on that committee for sure. I want nothing to do with that because it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that we have recognized it needs some love, and now we're called to action. The only thing that matters is that we begin to create a space of possibility, that we set aside all the negativity around it, and we create some excitement around it so that we can begin to envision it in the way that we would like to see it.
Amen.
So here's where it gets real personal. We don't have to know how. There's this really subtle thing that we say when we're teaching spiritual mind treatment, affirmative prayer. We say, don't outline for God how it needs to be done. And I think that's what we've been trying to figure out the details, and we've been doing it backwards. So we're stopping everything on Wednesday night. Many of us will be here at the midweek service. Reverend Clyde will be back in the pulpit, and we'll have a great hour with him. And then we're going to head outside, and we're going to do our work. We're going to surround this building with our presence and with our consciousness. We are going to begin to imagine what more is possible. This is like sitting in the space of asking God to reveal to us what that highest vision is. See, we could work all day at the details. And I would say to you that that's why we don't have to know any of those details. We just have to stand in principle. I know that life is for us. I know that we have a purpose for being here in the West Valley, that we have lots more to say to people and lots of ways to help people ride the wave of these changing times as this nation, as this world steps into a whole new cultural way of being, as spirituality continues to change and people step away from being so religious and become more open and more spiritual and more accepting of each other's ways of doing that. In God, all things are possible. So when we surround the building Wednesday night at 7:45, in your lawn chair or your car or walking or praying, meditating, however you want to do it, I want you to be careful and be conscious and intentional in breathing in and not looking at the flaws. Don't see what's wrong. This is where we make the change and we begin to see what's possible. Doesn't that sound inviting? We're going to begin to envision what more is possible. How would you desire to see the building when you pull into the parking lot, when you arrive here for any of the activities we do? But more than that, I am asking you right now to take that a step deeper. And I want you to think for a minute, how do you want to feel when you pull into that parking lot and you are impacted by looking at the new building? How do you want to feel? How can we make our feeling, this inside, everything that's important to us on the inside of this philosophy and teaching and our community of great, great love, how can we begin to, what do we want to feel when we pull into that parking lot? So let me ask you, and somebody should write this down. Well, how do you want to feel when you pull into the parking lot?
Joy.
What? Say it again.
Proud.
What else? Love. Thank you. What else?
Community.
Give me more. Peace.
Enliven.
You know why? Because we're fun. Who wouldn't want to hang out with us? We always have a good time on Sunday. We want to feel safe. We want to feel that reverence. We want to know that we can come here and worship and we can come here and play and that this is ours and that we cherish it. And so I really want to emphasize to you that the color of the paint will be, highly discussed. And that I want you to remember that that the color of the paint is just the skin of something bigger. It's the skin around the soul of this community in the same way that the color of a person's skin does not reveal the soul of who they are. And so we're going to surrender that as much as we can. We're going to invite the larger vision to come. We will select the perfect committee that I will not sit on to choose the colors. And we will pick you'll have some choice in it. It won't be something forced upon us. We're going to know. We're going to stand together. We're going to use this principle and know that that money will come easily and effortlessly. In fact, it is already here. In some way, we got to know that in the mind of God, this is already done. And we're going to prove it. And I want to tell you something that's rather bold. But I think that what we are doing, and I think this prayer service on Wednesday at 7:45 is going to be something that you do not want to miss out on. Because we are creating the future of this spiritual center and the future of us as a community. What we are doing in that prayer circle will be recorded in the history of this church. People after us will say, remember that time they all got around the building and prayed? Don't you wish we were there? Wouldn't that have been a fun thing to do? So, we have some work to do, but this is how principle works. This is it. We don't have to tell God how the money's going to come. God's going to align to our vision and feel that energetic desire within us as a community where we are collective. We are not individuals looking for just one specific form that would be meaningful or pretty to us. We're looking for how do we express those feelings of love and of joy and of relevance and of safety and of community. How do we do that? And it shall be revealed to us because that's the way the law works. All right. And so I want to, boy. We are going to anchor these ideas in the words of prayer today like we have never anchored words before. So just open yourself, open your hearts and open your minds and open your souls and let's just collectively open ourselves to all that's possible for us. So take a nice deep breath. And let us just turn within, away from that busy activity of thinking and doing and announcing, profoundly announcing. And let's feel the beautiful stillness at the core of our being. And in this new perspective, I begin to become aware of the presence of God right in this sanctuary. We can feel it on the inside of our being because it is an indwelling presence. Just feel the love of God within you. It is that movement of life. It is the activity of spirit itself showing up and expressing as each and every one of us. I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is the same love of God that has hovered here all morning long. I know that it is truth revealing itself to us, that even now things are coming together in this perfect order so that we may demonstrate that we know how to use this principle. And so I stand firmly in this love of God. I stand boldly and I recognize that all things are possible. that we have been thinking too small, and that there is a way for us to be big for God so that we might be this great, wonderful beacon of light in the West Valley that brings truth, that changes lives, that brings possibilities to any and all, even if they never step a foot in the sanctuary. I know that as we gather in prayer this week and surround this building with our love and our joy and the truth of how important it is for us to be having this message now, where so many people's lives can be changed, hearts can be expanded, forgiveness can unfold, healing is happening. And these are such a gift that we cannot keep in this small idea. There is no reason we have any obstacles or obstructions in any way. The way has been cleared. There is a healing going on. There is a healing in our physical bodies. There is a healing in our hearts so that our heartache is mended. There is a healing in the cells of our body, revealing that light that was so beautifully sung about earlier. There is that healing that is our return to wholeness. And so just as we know that is how the law works, we realize we are invited in anticipating, joyously anticipating the restoration of this building to its wholeness, to its beauty, to the purpose and reason we have been here for 40 years. And so I say thank you, God, because as we practice principle in this bold way, we see other ways to use it in our life day by day. And so I just feel that gratitude bubbling up within me. It's good. It is so good. It's very, very good. We are grateful. We know that it is already done, that every good gift we desire is ours. I say thank you, God, and I simply release this into the law, knowing that it is already done. And so it is.
Some say the grass is greener, say the sun is brighter, even if they've never seen the other side.
You're living in the future, never in the moment, thinking something's gonna change your life. Blinded to the beauty all through.